The minute you open your eyes from sleep, you begin a day full of sights and sounds. The wind can tell you if a storm is coming. The lapping of waves can tell you the phase of tide. And the sizzle from a frying pan can tell you when dinner is served. But as the caretakers of our beloved survivor thrivers, the sounds and words of our patients, of their families, and of our frontline practitioners are all too often discounted or ignored altogether. This is today's episode of the Croc Podcast, part one, entitled Listening to the Family.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Howdy, Croc Nation. Dr. Tommy and Ellie here with you with another amazing Croc podcast for who else but the most amazing people on earth, our survivor slash thrivers, Angel Santana. Have faith, let it begin. Angel, I miss you.
Man, let me tell you. It's like watching Halley's Comet.
Yes.
And getting excited because it finally has aligned up with the stars.
Yeah, I must apologize to our listeners missing last week for personal reasons, for family illness reasons. And I do apologize that I know you guys out there, wait for our podcast. And then I do apologize. So what I have done as sort of my penance is to put together a wonderful 3-week module that's going to be basically focusing on caretaker listening. So it's a podcast, and you guys know that every day I learn something from you all, from patients' families, from my coworkers and friends and family members. And this past week was a tough one, as you can imagine, for those that know me and know what was going on. But in any case, I was still, I guess, in tune enough to be able to learn a lesson. And we're going to start this week with listening to a patient's family. So, Angel, I'm sitting in a room, maybe about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, with this very nice gentleman who had a really bad cancer that was metastatic. And I was sitting there with his wife, and we had our relationship had gone back maybe a year, maybe slightly less than that. And we took care of this amazing gentleman, this amazing survivor. And he did fantastic. He actually over exceeded our expectations, had an amazing summer, and then came to see me now in the late fall, and was sitting in a wheelchair. And that didn't strike me as anything odd. And I was going through his data and reviewing things, and, and I kept on kind of saying, everything looks okay. Everything looks stable. Everything is good. And, his wife was kind of giving me hints. Well, he's really not that good. And, I know you're looking at all this stuff, but, what you're seeing is not what I'm seeing. And I said, well, why don't we have you come back in a month? Let's make sure you don't fall through the cracks and blah, 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 blah. And I let them out of the office. And maybe a couple of days later, maybe a week later, I got a phone call from his wife, and I'm thinking, the first thing I'm thinking is, another complaint, or another problem or another fire to put out. And, at first my attitude was a little like, you're kind of bugging me, I'm tired. And, I wasn't really, I wasn't rude, but I wasn't my usual amazing self to our great, survivors and family members. And, then something struck me. It was almost like the Lord opened up my mind and opened up my ears. And she said, no one's listening to me. You guys are telling me he's okay, but I'm with him 24 hours a day and he's not okay. The summer was fantastic. He was cooking for us and we really enjoyed that time with him. But, you guys keep telling me all this stuff and, I'm not seeing it. I'm not a doctor, but I'm not seeing it. And boom, all of a sudden, the bells started ringing and the whistles were blowing. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you for being you. Thank you for being so amazing. Thank you, you know, for shaking me up. Let me call you right back. Let me go look at the case. I went back. I looked at my notes. I looked at the films. I looked at everything. And indeed, I think she was right. I think that he wasn't doing well because, you know, the cancer was in a really bad location. And it really didn't change significantly. I wasn't wrong with that. But what I wasn't recognizing is the fact that because it was in a bad location and because it was causing some swelling, you know, he indeed was deteriorating. So I got them immediately into the hospital, you know, got them, you know, got every kind of stopped the world and kind of rethought the process. And of course, you know, now it becomes a podcast. So we're going to start with the doctors, and I'm going to kind of single us out here because I don't want to include the nurses and nurse practitioners and physician assistants. Where exactly do doctors go off the rails? And I thought I would go through a couple of observations that I had. So number one is our training. So we have observational training, knowledge training, and stamina and focus training. So in observational training, Angel, when they train us, it's like a curse and a blessing simultaneously. We are taught and trained hundreds of times over and over and over again to evaluate people quickly, to look at everything like we're a detective, pay attention to all the seen and observable, and almost be like a Murder of the Orient Express, whatever his name was, Perot, you know, be really super, super observational. And then you look at the way we look at our knowledge, like how much knowledge does it take to be a doctor, right? Like a ton. And they teach us these secrets. Like, it's almost like I feel like we're these witches, you know, brewing the secret recipe. We're wizards and witches and, you know, shamans, and we're like in the back of the cave and, you know, people bring their sick in and we do our little magical things and they teach us these secrets, these formulas. We're in this fraternity. They teach us the secrets to life and death. It's almost as if we know we've read the last page of a mystery novel and we know the ending before anyone else does. And we even know how to steal life from the jaws of death. And then that brings us to focus and stamina. So when I trained, and even people before me even trained harder, we were on call every other night. That meant that we would work 12 or 14 or 15 hours on our on day. And then on our on-call day, I should call that our off day, right? Because we weren't on call. And on our on-call day, we would work 24 plus the next 14 or whatever. And then weekends, at least where I trained, we would go in on Friday morning at whatever, 6 a.m., and we wouldn't get home until Monday night around 7 p.m. So we're talking about a stamina and a focus type of training that actually was so bad that you might have heard of the Libby Zion case back in whenever the 90s, when a couple of residents at Cornell made a mistake on a very famous writer's daughter, and she ended up dying and being misdiagnosed. She had meningitis and she died. And the gentleman, Mr. Zion, actually took it to the courts. And, you know, long story short, they changed the rules for training. So the residents that you see and the doctors you see in the hospital, they work their asses off for sure. But there are limits to what they're allowed to do, how long they're allowed to stay in the hospital before having to go home. So it's a whole different, you know, brave new world. And it's not for the bad, it's for the good. And all this is going to make sense, Angel. I'm going to put it all together. And what this training should produce is it should produce the ideal healer, right? These are all the ingredients to an amazing chocolate chip cookie, right? It should present a healer. It should produce a healer who's humble and selfless. But because we're human, because we're imperfect, sometimes what we get is not a good healer. we get an arrogant healer. And I think this arrogance and this superiority, it's almost as if we are overconfident. Just because we could save lives, we think we could do everything better than anyone else. When I was in college and pre-med, you know, all the business majors would be going to the pub on Thursday nights, and I would listen to Rosalita about 100 times, you know, Bruce Springsteen, and hear everybody screaming and laughing and drinking and puking and screwing and doing all the things that you do in college. And I'm there studying my anatomy or my physiology or whatever it was I was studying. And I felt superior to everybody because, you know, I was going to enter the sacred halls of, you know, the healer, and they were not. So we think because we're doctors, we're better. We think we're even better than our lawyers. We think we're smarter than every businessman, every entrepreneur, every inventor, and every restaurateur. And I can tell you with personal experience from many people I know, any doctor who opens up a restaurant is going to go broke or is going to go out of business. I can tell you that right now. We think that we're expert stockbrokers. And, you know, here we are, like, with, we haven't put in the work, but we read a little article. We might read the Wall Street Journal, and we think like we're these really savvy investors, and we lose our entire portfolios because we're so stupid. We think we're better than everybody. We're so arrogant. Even our hobbies, because we have, you know, we have this expendable income. We, you know, we have money in the bank. We have a couple extra bucks, and we think that, you know, we could do all these cool things and do them better. And, you know, people who sell airplanes, they must laugh when a doctor walks in to buy an airplane because they think, oh, this guy's going to be dead in 2 minutes. And it's really true. I mean, pilots, doctors are terrible pilots. You know, we die all the time in airplanes. We think we're these great mountain climbers and all these, you know, hobbies that cost $1 million. I think of the doctor who was on that fatal climb into that, in that book, Into Thin Air on Mount Everest, when all those people died. Of course, one of those guys was a doctor, and he was an idiot. You know, he should have never been where he was. But because he had his $80,000 or whatever, you know, he was on this expedition. And, you know, again, just us thinking we're better and superior. So it's no surprise that when we're focused on a problem, and someone such as a medically naive family member who just so happens to be with the patient 24/7, and we're with them about 20 minutes, you know, we discount or we ignore their information and their insights. And this is really terrible. And another thing that we have is we have time constraints. So if I were given one day to research a tough case, and, you know, memorize the chart and look at all the previous medical records and confer with all my colleagues and do a real examination instead of the cursory examinations we do, if we do them at all, you know, do a full literature search, review the x-rays with the radiologist, ponder, analyze, we would never miss anything, right? But that's not the case. You know, I see an average of 20 to 30 patients a day that are not on treatment. And we probably have 60 patients a day on treatment that are constantly requiring our time. So you can imagine there's only so many minutes in a day. So, you know, you could see that when I'm sitting in this room with this woman, this amazing saint, you know, who really gave me this beautiful lesson, you know, I'm like, you know, I'm not really as focused as I probably should be. And I say that with pride in the sense that I'm happy to share that information because it's not just me. You know, I just didn't, you know, I may have missed something, but it happens every freaking second. And that's why I always say with Angel that it's a broken medical system. Another one of the problems in listening is that we have these preconceived ideas, and this isn't just doctors. This is just in life. You know, we go in with an idea that we think is right. And because of our arrogance, sometimes we think that our ideas or our answers are always the correct ones. But in fact, sometimes they're not. And this is a really bad habit because it leads to shutting down and shutting off other possibilities and potentially valuable insights that could help our patients, our survivor thrivers. And we think sometimes like a Polaroid camera. So I don't know how many of you guys are as old as us or as old as me, where like your first camera was that Polaroid where you take a shot and then it would come out and you have to wait about 2 minutes before it develops. And they out came this really terrible photo. And it's actually funny to look at the old Polaroid cameras. I bet you, Angel, your parents have Polaroids of their parents and
of course
your aunts and uncles. And I think that that's a really good analogy or metaphor for the way sometimes doctors think, because when we see a patient, we're really seeing a Polaroid picture. We're not really seeing the full picture. We're just seeing them in that particular moment. And when this particular patient came in, you know, of course, they're hyped up because it's a doctor's visit and they're probably a little more animated or maybe a little more like, you know, they don't want to, you know, acknowledge that they're really sick. So they're kind of acting and, you know, we're not getting it. And, you know, we're just seeing this sort of this little picture in time, like this little tiny snapshot. And we're not really seeing the dynamic flow of what's going on with the case. So I say we shouldn't be a Polaroid camera. We should be a time-lapse video surveillance camera where we're able to kind of see the whole picture as opposed to just that one little picture. And then just some miscellaneous stuff. Sometimes we forget our checklists and we take shortcuts. I think one of the things that made that physician, Atwal Gandhi, so famous is that he looked into the fact that the medical system is broken and, you know, came up with this checklist in surgery where you do your timeouts and you make sure you stop, even though it seems ridiculous and everyone knows why you're there. And you ask the patient, why are you here? I'm here to have my tonsils out, or I'm here to have an appendectomy. I'm here to have a tummy tuck or whatever. And it's like, you know, right-sided, left-sided, you know, IV antibiotics, you know, all these questions, these checklists. Sometimes we think that we're too smart and we don't, you know, do our checklists and we take shortcuts and that's not good. Sometimes we're fatigued. Sometimes it's just mental and physical fatigue that makes us not focus and not listen. Sometimes it's personal distractions. I personally knew a doctor who used to write his checks out while he was interviewing patients. And I knew doctors that would play video games on their computers while they were interviewing patients. It's just not good. I had doctors that would just excuse themselves in the middle of a consult to go talk to their stockbroker or their financial planner. So, you know, this is not good. You know, when you're there, you need to be there 100%. If you need to do these other things, then you take the day off. And then there's personal problems, right? So I was in the middle of, you know, having sickness in the family, illness in the family. So my head probably wasn't entirely there. Sometimes there's health issues. Sometimes there's personal issues. You know, we have to make sure that when we're there, we're there, that we're playing like a champion every day. So Angel, to conclude, you know, what could I have done differently? So once we as doctors make these mistakes, you can't take it back, but you can learn from it. And that's important. And luckily, my distraction didn't cause an issue or change an outcome, thank God. But if it did, you know, then you have to just forgive yourself. And thank God, as I said, I thanked that woman a million times and I told her how amazing she was and how she was fantastic and she did the right thing, because it was her persistence that helped snap me out of my sort of my fog and get me back in the game. And also we have to recognize that it will happen again. You know, we are not perfect. Like, we can't go in there and get perfect. Even Mickey Mantle hit whatever 300. That means that 7 times out of 10, he was not successful. So, you know, we have to recognize that we may not be 100%. We will not be 100%, but we'll try to get as close as possible. And we have to always be vigilant and minimize the damage. So in this case, again, nothing bad happened, thank God. But in many cases, that's not the case. And we have to make sure that we are reliant on that and properly respectful of that potential. And we have to also reframe. And again, it all comes down to the same thing, why we do this podcast. We do this podcast, we take the time, and believe me, when Angel and I do these tapings, we're both exhausted, we're both, one eye is open, one eye is closed, we just work 14 hours, Angel with his little kids and the whole thing. I mean, it's hard, you know, but why we're doing this is because we know the value of our patients, of our survivors, of our thrivers, of their families, of our coworkers, of our nurses, And it is really an honor. And we can never forget that you guys are trusting us. You're trusting your doctors. You're handing us your lives. You don't even give your lawyer those kind of, you give them maybe your social security number, or you give them checks, or you give them cash or whatever, but you don't give them the right to your life. And the other thing we have to do is we have to take a walk in your shoes. I mean, for that beautiful woman, that wife, you know, like, you know, maybe for a split second, I didn't recognize the fact that when you leave me after 20 minutes, then you got to carry this guy and put him in the car, and then you got to bring him home. And then you got to deal with all the shenanigans that are going on with caring for a sick partner and a compromised partner. And sometimes we have to continue to recognize that we have to take a walk and empathize with what's going on with your lives. And, you know, we have to be grateful that we have these people, these nurses and nurse practitioners and advanced care practitioners and ancillary staff members, you know, that we'll be talking about next week, and patients' families and the patients themselves, because there's only one thing harder, Angel, than it is to be a healer, and that's to be the patient. And next week, we're going to be covering nurses and ancillary care workers on this module on listening. Your thoughts, my friend?
You know, I think what's interesting is we just did a full circle too for yourself. And I think this is a very profound lesson for all doctors. The fact that you, Dr. E, can remember where you were when you first started and how you were precautious, but also knowing that you had to buckle down and study so that you can be prepared. It also enabled you and prepared you for all the things that we learn on a daily basis, as opposed to being a doctor. With that being said, the knowledge that all these doctors have, and knowing where you've been and knowing where you've studied and knowing what you may or may not run into, allows us, the patient, to understand that you are human. We all make mistakes. So because of that, we have to remember that it's trial and error. Even though, yes, your job is to diagnose, your job is to figure out what is going on, the fact that you can sit back and say, okay, I made a mistake, or I went and got put in my place a little bit, but I was able to move forward and gain 10 extra steps, is something that I think most people don't realize they need to do.
Absolutely, Angel. And I always love your remarks and the way you put everything together for us at the end of the podcast. I'm really excited to do the next two episodes to kind of tie it all together. And look forward to doing that next week. Angel, I want to say thank you to Rod. I haven't seen Rod, but we'll hopefully be having dinner with him soon. Again, trying to get our podcast out to more survivors and thrivers, as well as healthcare workers, as well as family members, as well as whoever is, you know, might find value in the message that we're trying to bring forth and utter. And that message is very simple. Our survivors out there, you know who you are. You're listening to us and you're going through a tough time, and maybe your doctor isn't listening to you. Maybe you had a bad situation or a visit with one of your doctors, and you're ready to kind of close relationship with that doctor. Give them another chance. Reach out to them. Tell them how you feel. Tell them that you think that they're not listening to you. Tell them that they're not at home with you. Tell them that you're up all night with your family member who's ill. Tell them that you're the one who's picking up, you know, all the garbage and dressing and cleaning and not sleeping and fatigued and feeding and, you know, and then more cleaning and more stress. And then this is not even dealing with the cancer experience and the fear as it relates to cancer. This is just taking care of your loved one and just having the feeling that someone is listening to you and is reading your message. This podcast and the next two are specifically for you guys to make sure you know that I will do everything possible. Angel will do everything possible to make sure that all of your doctors and all of your healthcare workers that are taking care of you will stay alert and be vigilant and really listen to what you're saying. And I will end this podcast as I end each and every one of them, wishing you all a long, healthy, happy, and cancer-free life. God bless you. God be with you. Peace.